Marsha P.
Hi, family. I'm Marsha P, and I'm an addict. Really grateful to be here. I want to thank the convention committee for asking me to come and be a part of such an awesome, awesome convention. I want to say this is the first for me in terms of the amount of people that are here. And Sherman is just a person who kind of keeps things done, make it happen. So I've known about the commitment for a little while, but I was in a different slot. I had a different topic, and I was kind of okay with that. But then he came back, and he told me I was midday, and I thought, you know, okay, it's probably going to be a few more people than I expected. But I'm okay, and just, you know, the bottom line is we're just here to share our experience, strength, and hope. You know, we all have a story. You know, I'll make mine in the order of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now for me on this journey. I want you now just to turn to your neighbor, give them a hug, and say, surgery of the spirit. We're fine. When I heard the topic, the theme of the convention, I thought about surgery of the spirit and what that means. I happened to work in a hospital setting, and so I started thinking about the different clinics that I sometimes see. And we have one that's called palliative care. It's a clinic where pretty much when someone is just being made comfortable before their demise. See, that's what happens sometime in recovery. We got some people up in here who just want to be comfortable. They don't want to keep doing what's really been needed to do. We know the difference between recovery and clean time. We know the difference between doing the right thing and doing the wrong thing. In the book, How It Works, on page 45, stood out to me. It says, in quiet moments of meditation, God's will can become evident to us. Quietening the mind through meditation brings an inner peace that brings us into contact with the God within us. I want to talk about a little bit about how to quiet the mind. And most of all, I want to talk about my God. So what it was like. Let me first say I'm a little small town country girl from a little small town in North Carolina. North Carolina is a tobacco industry. You either worked in the cotton mill, cotton and tobacco, or you worked in the manufacturing of tobacco, cigarette manufacturing. And so I was born into a large family. I have five brothers and two sisters. I'm the baby girl of this bunch. My grandfather was a hard-working sharecropper man, and he taught us there was nothing more important than family and land. See, I was raised in a time, again, like the lady said earlier today in her meeting, she said, you know, I was raised in a time where children was just seen and not heard. I'm talking about you didn't talk around grown people. I had a country mama that didn't play. You didn't come in, you know, you like you just ran, you didn't sit around like today, you know, you have kids be all up in your conversation, they hear you on the telephone, you know, they have no discipline. But again, my mama didn't play. So if grown folks were talking, you wasn't even in the room, or either she would just give you that look. I grew up in a time where your neighbor could beat you, tell your mama she beat you. Your mama thanked her and beat you again. See, I'm coming from an era where, you know, if we had a simple life because we were poor people. You know, we lived out in the country. I remember as a kid, you know, we had to feed the horses, the cows, the chickens, slop the hogs. I remember churning butter. I remember my grandmother had arthritis so bad that I was the person that she would put under that old saw machine to push the pedals for her because she could barely move. But see, every Easter Sunday we would wake up. That's back whenever old people could cut out a pattern out of newspaper. And you wake up the next morning with a brand new dress. Y'all remember those little old Easter speeches we had? We practiced our speech and go to church. Now I'm talking about, I came from a family who we were church people. I don't care what you did on Friday, Saturday night, on Sunday morning, you was going to be in church all day. And I hated that because everybody in church was some kin to you. We was in the country. So I remember just growing up on that farm, and nothing was more important again than my grandfather. We didn't have nothing, but we had a whole lot of love. And he had taught us early on that nothing was more important than your last name. That name meant something to him. We were Staffords, and he said, ain't nothing, don't never mess up your good name. So I'm like, okay, cool. I didn't really understand it all that time then. So I remember our first transition, my mother was a hard worker. She worked 2 and 3 jobs. And I remember my father had walked out on us when I was about 5. Now, I love my father. I didn't know why he left. All I know was that I was a baby girl, and somehow I think I blamed myself. Why did he go after me? But my mother was the kind of mom, she never let us talk bad about him. My dad had moved to Washington, D.C. He had moved to D.C. He lived on 17th and Park Irving, 16th and Irving, up in Adams Morgan. I was always off Park Road. So every summer I was allowed to go visit my dad. I'd catch a train from Concord, North Carolina, right out of Charlotte, come on up to D.C. And that was just really a big deal for a 14-year-old kid. I just always came to see my dad. So, here I am. I'm like just, in a time where a kid, my mom finally moved us from the country over to what we thought we had arrived, because we moving from what we call Overtown, which was from the country over to Concord. Now we moving to the projects, but I think we moving up, because now we got a brick house. We don't have the outhouse like we did in the country, so we know we kind of think we got it going on. We don't know we project children. So anyway, just growing up with those kids, and I want to tell you that the earliest memory that I have of feeling bad was that at 15 years old, I got pregnant. I became pregnant. I was a freshman in high school. He was a senior. I was a cheerleader. I made pretty good grades. Everything was cool. I was like, okay, but I had to kind of do what those older girls were doing to keep him. I had his leather jacket. Back then they had the class rings, and I just wanted that guy. I just wanted him. He was so handsome and athletic. And so I remember becoming pregnant and being very ashamed of that. And so at 15 years old, I had this beautiful baby girl. My mother did not believe in abortion. She was pro-life. You made this bed, you're going to lay in it. You made a mistake, stay in school. So I stayed in school the entire time, didn't miss a day, had the baby on time, graduated on time. And I remember I just didn't want to be like the rest of the girls in the hood who were having kids, getting on welfare, that vicious cycle. And I saw it. And I thought to myself, I just don't want to do that. But I remember that I saw this commercial on TV one day, and it said, be all you can be. Uncle Sam wants you. So my brothers had already gone into the military, and they had told me that whatever you do, don't go in there and mess up our name. Don't get no Article 15. Don't bring no attention to yourself. You be a good soldier. You better do the right thing. Now, I'm 17 years old. I don't know much about it, but me and my girlfriend, I talked her into going into what's called a buddy plan. I ain't even really old enough. I'm on a delayed entry program. I ain't really old enough to go in yet, so I got to wait for my next birthday. But we go in on the delayed entry program in the early 70s. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, okay, this is a whack corps. I don't know nothing about what I'm getting myself into. So, again, the recruiter tricked me into some old crazy MOS. I don't really know what this means, but we want to be together. So I'm stuck like Chuck, and I'm really serving artillery, infantry, ordnance. I was 55 Bravo. That's ammunition. We got to keep the ammunition for the people who are artillery. So I didn't have a clerk job or a nurse job. I was straight up out in the field every single month. 30 days at a time, I'm hanging out with those grunts, I'm out there supporting those units, running around behind the 82nd down at Fayetteville, North Carolina. I'm hanging out in Fort Bragg. I'm down at Fort Hood. I'm First Cav Division. You know, every time you look around, it's just your left, right, your left, 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 left. Your left, right, left, right, left. Your mama was home and you left. Your daddy was home and you left. Right, left, right, left. So I'm just straight up running around, you know, and being in the Army was so good for me. It really was easy for me. I excelled because I told you I came up in a time where you just did what you was told to do. So I took orders really well. I was a good soldier. So here I am, I'm running around a little hard strike buck sergeant. You know, I got on spit shine boots. You know, I got on decorations, duty, honor, integrity, and I'm doing all that stuff. So now I'm over in bomb holding, wild flicking. I'm at the Rock. I'm over there in Germany, West Germany. You know what I'm saying? Somebody here know what I'm talking about. I was over there serving. All I know is I was straight up Rambo Dean. Rambo Dean. So I'm out in the field with these guys. You know what I'm saying? I'm hooking up. It's so cold. I got on Mickey Mouse boots, pal cap, 3 pairs of pants. You know, it's cold in Germany. And I remember when the soldier passed that canteen to me, and he said, hey, take a hit of this. So I said, well, he passed it. He said, you want to stay warm, you need to hit this. Come on, Sarge. So I took it and I hit it. You know, I really didn't like the taste of alcohol. You know, I mean, I didn't really like the way it made me feel the next day. So when they passed around that next crowd, I mean, we were smoking hash out of an apple core. You know, we improvising some stuff. Y'all know what that's like. So, you know, we out in the field, we hitting it out of an apple core. Then they passed around this next substance, because again, this is camaraderie. I want to feel a part of. So he passed around that next substance, and I remember hitting it, and immediately I became sick. You know, I'm like throwing up. You know, I said, well, what is this? I don't like this. It's making me sick. And the guy next to me said, well, if you don't throw up, that means it ain't good. So I don't even know I'm doing, boy. So it wasn't until they passed around that next white powdered substance that I found my drug of choice. I found something that did not make me sick. I found something that I could show up in the orderly room. I could still fall in. I could still do about face. I could still stand at attention. I remember I was showing up and I was a good soldier. That was the beginning of my end. And I remember that it made me feel like I was a better soldier. So there was this march. We was always doing all these marches in the military. You know, like, you know, left, right, left, right. So, you know, all these marches. And they got this one march called Mock Time. Now, Mock Time is whenever, you know, your whole platoon, the company, it's a beautiful thing whenever you mocking time in unison. 200 people just mocking time. But the thing about mocking time, you don't go nowhere. You just stand in place. So I'm showing up here tonight in Ocean City to tell you about a time whenever I was just smoking time, stuck like Chuck, 12 years, I couldn't go nowhere. I'm talking about just marking time, being a soldier, could not go outside that defense perimeter. I couldn't leave a hood because that was, everything I knew was right there. So I'm in West Germany, doing what I gotta do. I'm still showing up. I'm still looking the part. Y'all know what we call it in here, image time. I'm still looking like a good soldier, but I got a secret. So it used to be fun. Using started out being fun. Y'all know what it's like when people still be passing it. Now I got to take shit out of people's hands. I grabbed the hot end. God damn. It's at the beginning of my road. So here I am. I'm doing what I gotta do. I remember hearing my brother's voice. Don't mess up. Don't get an Article 15. You better not bring no attention to yourself. So I've got this in my brain. You know, I don't want to mess up. I don't want them to find out about this thing. So I got about 10 years in, and they asked me that I wanted. They pretty much gave me a set of orders and said, you know, we got one more duty station for you. I think it would be a good for you. You know, we're going to send you, I'm overseas, so, you know, we call it back home. We're going back to the world. You know, so the duty station was Washington, D.C. We're going to send you to D.C. We're going to send you to the Pentagon. So now I got orders for the Pentagon. And I done did so well with this mask that I'm wearing that now they take me from being a hard strike buck sergeant E5 to being a second lieutenant. So now I'm wearing second lieutenant bars. They sent me to OCS. I'm up in Fort Meade, Maryland, Fort Myer, running around. I got bars on my shoulder. I work for the Pentagon. I'm working for five-star generals, full bird colonels. You know, I got the I'm a telecommunications officer. People are saluting me, and I kind of got it going on, and they think I'm smart. But I got a secret. And I remember one night when I was using, you know how at first we use on the weekend, at first we use every now and then, you know, and somewhere in that using, I crossed that invisible line. I'm talking about that line where, you know, from recreational to habitual. And I remember waking up needing it and wanting it. So now I'm smoking. And I don't know what's going on with me. You know, I got a little, you know, my look is kind of changing, you know, but I still got a little car. I still got a little condo. I'm living over there off of Duke Street in Alexandria. You know, my sister, she live out in Laurel, out in Fort Washington, Maryland. I got a sister. She real nosy, right? She always want to know, what's wrong with you? Why you looking like that? You know how when you use, you be like, what you talking about? I look fine, you know. So she being nosy. Now I got my little baby girl, my little girl at the time, she's 5 years old, you know, maybe get ready to be six, she in the first grade, you know, and my sister called my mama in North Carolina. Now listen, I'd rather you call the police than call my mama. Please don't call my mama. So my sister called my mom and told her something going on with Marsha. We don't know what it is. You know, you might need to come up here. Now, my mom, again, I told you she don't play. So she rolled up. I remember it like it was yesterday. My mom knocked on the door to my little apartment. She said, I don't know what you're doing up here. You're not going to put this baby through it. See, when you're in the country, your people will take your children. The only reason I did not lose my child, the DHR, whatever y'all, DSS, DHR, I didn't lose my baby because my mama was not going to let that happen. So she came and picked up my daughter, 5 years old. I'm just going to take her home with me. You can come. This is the beginning of the summer. You can leave her with me, and I'll take her and let her stay with me for a while. You know, you come and get her to when school starts. And I was like, you know, that's really not a bad idea. You know, I'm, you know, justifying. That's not a bad idea. That's fine. That'll work. So now I remember that she takes my daughter at 5 years old. I want to tell you that by the time I put it down, by the time I put down the stem, the antenna, the can, the bottle, by the time I put down the tire gauge, the powder, the pills, the alcohol, by the time I got that, she was 17 years old. 17 years old. I had missed all the important years of that girl's life. See, I did that first geographical at the end of my road in D.C. because I don't really know what's going on, but something is wrong with me. And right before I left D.C., let me back up a minute. Right before I leave D.C., you know, as long as you got a car and apartment, you kind of don't think you got a problem. So I was using crazy and all this running around. The only difference in D.C. and North Carolina was I could go to Southeast, Northeast, Northwest. I could go to Virginia, Maryland. Nobody could kind of keep up with me. But in North Carolina, you know, everybody's akin to you. Everybody know you, Emmalou's daughter, and all that. So before I leave D.C., I remember I had this little car, right? And, you know, as long as you got a car, you can get on. So I had a little car, and I was one of them addicts that once it was in me, I was stuck, like Chuck. I mean, it was something about using. I just couldn't leave if I had already hit it. So I remember this particular night, you know, I get in my little car. I'm a ride over to Southeast. Now, I used to go cop in uniform. I'm talking about Anacostia. Some of y'all might not know where Martin Luther King is. I'm over there on Martin Luther King. I'm down there by the shrimp boat. I'm hanging out behind the Quonset. I'm just doing my thing, using, because I figured, like, you know, it really can't be that bad. I'm getting ready. You know how you think you get ready to stop. So I'm getting high using, you know. I jump in my little car to go across the bridge to go get one. I leave them top secret documents out in the Pentagon. I leave them on the desk. I'm only going to be gone for a minute. Y'all know one is too many, and 1,000 is never enough. So I took the car, and and I left the documents out, and I went over the bridge, 395, 295, headed to Southeast to go get just one. Well, I roll up on the little dope boy over there in Southeast, Anacostia. The little dope boy came over to my car, you know, so, and then check this out. Before I get over the bridge, I'm a smart addict. Now, D.C. got something called a HOV lane. That means that if you got more than one person in the car, you can go faster, you know, across the bridge. So I ain't got time to wait for all that, so I go buy me a life-size dummy. I put the dummy in the car with me. I turn the dummy head like this, throw the dummy hand up. And me and dummy go across the bridge. So we roll up on the little dope boy, you know, we roll up and I say, listen, I need, you know, I always needed one extra. I said, give me three for 50. I need an extra one, you know, it's my birthday, I need something extra. So little dope boy looking at me, he look at the dummy, he said, I'm gonna give you an extra one for the dummy. To me or the mannequin, because both of us real dumb. That's how I used to go get mine. I don't know how you used. So at the time now, I'm ready to go back and do this geographical, because in my mind, they can't be getting high like this in North Carolina. I'm over on Temple Hills, running all around crazy, you know what I'm saying? So I got it. All I got to do is just move, and I can stop using. So I moved back to Carolina. Only difference is, really, everybody know you now. You can't hide the addiction. I'm riding around. I'm walking around, walking the streets all times of the morning. You know, I got half a perm in my bang. Like, I'm looking crazy. I don't know. I'm like, people looking at me. You know, I don't know why you think people don't know when you're using. So I'm like, oh, my God, you know, it's going to be better. So I get on home, and, you know, I'm walking the streets now. And my daughter is totally ashamed of me. She's looking at me, Mom, please, because at 17, she's, like, humiliated. My God, you know, you ain't my mama. You know, my grandma, my mama, you're a fucking crackhead. She was just so angry, just bitter. When I came home, she was just hated me, and I was just trying to, you know, like, wait a minute, baby girl. She was like, every time I get on my bus in the morning, the kids are talking about you. Now I'm talking about a 17-year-old that has, she valedictorian. She got a scholarship to the best engineering school in the state of North Carolina. She was making straight A's. I never hugged her. I never thanked her. I never told her how proud I was of her. I didn't have it in me. I was trying to get one more. So when that girl was telling me, Mama, please, you humiliate me. She said, every morning on the bus, them kids is talking about how they had their way with my mama. She said, Mama, can you just stop? Can you just be normal? So now I'm feeling the pain. I would like to tell you I stopped because of that, but y'all know that ain't my story. One thing I want to tell you tonight, if you don't hear nothing else I say, make sure you tell your own story. You know how people always want to bring up who you used to be. You know how a motherfucker try to make you remember, oh, I remember when she used to be. I remember that too, motherfucker. Let me tell it. I know it. I know my story. Yeah. Because now I'm just about ready. I feel it coming. I don't know how it's going to happen, but I know I was just at the end of my road. I'm walking around in my hometown. I guess I'm saying all this to say that I left my hometown a hero, and I came back a zero. I remember they was writing all these articles about me in the Concord paper, and they were proud of me. And I was ashamed of who I had become. So now I can't be trusted. My family don't want, you know how you burn all the bridges. I don't know about your story, but you know, we hurt the people that love us the most. So now my mother just looking at me, she just shaking her head. You know, we get that head, you know, they're looking at you, Lord have mercy. Jesus Christ. Jesus, take the wheel. Oh my God. Every time I come around, you know, they talking, they trying to talk me, do something, kid, what is wrong with you? You have lost your mind. I remember my mama told me one time, she said, Marsha, don't make permanent decisions based on temporary situations. I didn't understand that at the time. She said, because you have lost your mind. She said, you know I did not raise you like this. Some of us come from good homes. We know what it's like to have love. And we just got stuck. I just got stuck. So now here I am. I'm at home. I'm running around the street acting crazy. And I was the type of addict that I was doing what I had to do to get the next one, you know. In the beginning, it was like, hey, I did what I had to do. I was the type of addict that once it was in me, I couldn't move. Whatever you wanted me to do, I did it. I wanted to, so bad to learn how to say no. Because once it was in me, I never got a chance to say no. If them little boys told me, I need you to do me, do my partner, I need you and her to do each other. If he said, I need you to, see, whatever you told me to do, I was your slave once it was in me. I'm talking about, I'm the type of addict that I remember tearing out my food stamps. Y'all know when we had the little book, you know, they looked like little play money. I used to tear the damn food stamps out, give them away. You know, I'm standing there with nothing, send my child somewhere else to eat. I'm talking about I used to go do you and you, and get home and find out it ain't even real dope. I'm talking about the end of my road, what it was like to get one more. I was so tired of looking up in the men's faces. I was so tired of doing what I had to do to get it. I had a kind of reputation that everybody would go get me to do what they wouldn't do. We'll go get Marsha. See, I was known for what I did with my mouth. And I wasn't proud of that, but it was all I had. I'm telling you, see, I was the kind of woman, you know, that honor among thieves. You know how you be out there rolling? I had a little girl, me and her rolling together. We doing things together because now we hate what we got to do, but we doing what we got to do. So we got this thing where you go make a lick, you get high, I go make a lick. You know, I ain't going behind you. I ain't trying to sneak behind you. You know, one of your tricks. I mean, I didn't do your man unless you told me to. If you told me to, I did. But I'm one of them women who I'm kind of loyal. You know what I'm saying? I was a lawyer kind of bitch. You know, you don't go behind me, so now you going to get high, you getting paid, and you ain't include me. I was kind of upset with her about that thing. So this particular day, I remember, you know, we all got them bottoms and them times when we come up with, you know, what is going on. And I remember this little young dude, he over there cutting up the package. You know, I'm saying to you, he in there shake, cutting off, you know, I'm waiting for the shake. I'm waiting for the crumbs. I ain't come to tell y'all waiting on a package. I'm waiting on the shaved crumbs. So the man in there cutting up the package. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. My daughter came over my house because I always stayed in that little project house. She stayed wherever, you know, I just let her stay wherever because I didn't want her to see her classmates. So as soon as he got ready, you know, he's cutting the package up. I'm waiting on him to get finished. I get a knock on the door. I'm like, who is it? You know, I was in control of my house. That was one thing the dope dealer liked. Oh, she in control of her house. You know, I ain't let everybody in. You know, I was one of them intellectual addicts. I'm not letting just everybody in. That was before the end. So I go to the door, and I look through the peephole, and it's my daughter, the 17-year-old. She got tears in her eyes. She like, I'm just want to stay in my room tonight. I'm like, what are you doing here? Why are you here? You know what? You know what I do? You know I got company. She said, well, whatever. You do you. Just let me go to my room. So I'm looking at her. I said, okay, come in. But y'all know it ain't one problem to a crack addict, and that's called noise. Don't make no noise. So I tell my child, don't make no noise. So y'all know she went in there and started bumping on stuff right away because she wanted whoever in there to go. You know what I'm saying? So as soon as she made that noise, I told him, I said, don't you go nowhere, because he got kind of spooked and was getting ready to leave. So he said, well, I'm gone. You know, I'm gonna go ahead and leave. I said, no, just hold on. Let me get rid of her. You know, just hold on. It's pouring down raining. My only child. I step to her, bring her out of the bedroom. You got to go. What are you doing? I told you don't make no noise. She said, Mama, hold on. Just wait a minute for a minute. Just hold on. She said, don't send me back over there tonight. She said, because he keep touching me. He keep molesting me. He keep hurting me. I looked my baby in her eyes. And I told her, just go back over there for a little while. and I'll come and get you. See, I ain't coming to Maryland to tell y'all I didn't know about it. Some of y'all in here know some shit going on right now. You need to know that it's the pain, your bottom, don't have to be my bottom. And I remember the pain was that I let my only child go back in harm's way. I didn't have enough in me to say no to a handful of powder, a little crack cocaine. So now, it was a day where my grandfather, again, was an invalid. It was my turn to go take care of him. My mama said to me, "Marsha, go take care of Papa and feed him. I don't have time today. It's your turn." This is a man who took care of my entire family all his life. So it's my turn to go get Papa. So y'all know I kept a little old car. Now, I had the raggediest car in the world. Okay, I just told y'all, if you got a car, you can get on. So I had a little old car. Tags were never right. No insurance, no muffler. You know, you can hear me coming. One side of the car, the door, you had to get in on this side. And I had a stocking or something, you had to tie the door closed, right? So all y'all was talking about me, they were like, "Here come Marsha P, she in the police car, you can get in, but you can't get out." Little raggedy car, so I get in the car, I go take care of my granddaddy. But on my way to take care of him, somebody stopped me with just one. Y'all know one is too many, and 1,000 is not enough. So I say, okay, I'm going to do this. So me and the guy, we start hitting, you know, smoking and whatever. You know, I mean, I look up and it's 2 hours later. Oh, my God, I forgot to go feed my grandfather. Can you hold on till I get back? Because he still got a few crumbs. He got some residue. Don't rinse the pipe. You know, don't do none of that. I'll be right back. I didn't say he had a package. I said don't rinse the pipe. I'll be right back. So I run down to the country to take care of my grandfather, and when I get there, he had rolled himself up to the table, and he was eating a pack of saltine crackers. He was in a wheelchair, and I was just, you know, he was hungry. And I ran in, and I said a few things to him, and he just kind of looked at me, "Oh, Red," because he used to call me Red when I was a kid. I had long red hair. And he said, "Oh, Red," he said, "don't worry about me. I don't want to be in anybody's way." So I just said a few things to him. I got to get back for dude. Mr. Pike. So I get back in that little rabbit car, go back to Concord, and the very next morning, my grandfather took a shotgun and killed himself. So now the next 2 years, I just use the excuse to just lose my mind. So if you ain't here tonight and you knew and you're looking for an excuse, they told me the pain is refundable. I hadn't even got to the end of my road, and I didn't really understand it, but I knew that something inside of me, I was walking around so hollow. So now, I remember thinking that jails and institutions was for bad people. That wasn't my story. So I get to, you know, I find myself, you know, writing paper, hanging paper. Y'all know writing them checks and stuff. So now I'm hanging with people who, I was not a booster. I really was too scared to steal, but I sure would take you to steal. And I'm telling you, you do not want my little car to be the getaway car. But I'm rolling out with these people every day. You know, they call it going to work. We going to work. So now I catch this charge. So I remember standing in front of the judge, shackles on my feet, handcuffed. I remember when he gave me them years in the penitentiary. I remember he gave me that nickel to a dime. My brother said, "Baby girl, just go do your little time. You'll be all right. Don't snitch. Do what you got to do and hang in there." So here I am now. I'm laying up in them prisons and jail cells. And I'm looking up at the ceiling thinking, "God, how did I get here?" Every other bed in the penitentiary was HIV positive. I don't know why God let that cup pass me. I don't know why I didn't come up positive, because I was a very high risk, but I kept throwing up my hands saying, "God, I thank you that I was not positive." So I did my time. I want to tell you, I came back home and I did something different, but I didn't. They taught me in here, if you do what you always did, you'll get what you always got. So I came back to what was familiar. I came back to the man. I came back to the good sex. I came back to all that he had to offer. I didn't know who had had it while I was locked up. That didn't matter to me. I came back to what I was familiar to me. So here I am. I'm back. And I'm up and down the streets again. And I'm in and out of the court system because there's so much domestic violence. Y'all know what it's like once you get it in you. I need one more. I need for you to take care of that. Sometimes I provoke those fights so that he would have to beat me down so he would feel sorry for me and give me some more. I'm talking about living to use and using to live. So at the end of my road, I'm going to tell you about this. I'm coming on down. It's a Friday night. There's something special about a Friday night. I'm going to tell you something. When you're an addict, and that word called desperation, when you're an addict and you stop on a Friday. See, I remember I came and I fell up into one of them houses. Now, I'm going to tell you something about me. I always had it. When you saw me coming, you was glad to see me coming because I always had it. Because I knew how to make that money. I need to tell you, I was in and out of them cars doing what I had to do to get one. So here it was. I had made a good lick. Because I remember I had the package. I had some money. And I was all in. It was Friday. Boom. You know, that's our night. So I fall up in the crack house. You know, you got to straighten the house lady. House lady, she always the greediest one in the bunch. Oh, my God. So I straighten her. And I give her hers and a couple other people in there. I straighten them, you know. But they know me. And they know as long as I'm holding, I ain't going nowhere. Because I'm one of the ones, I ain't leaving as long as I got some. And I sure ain't going if I think you got some hidden. So I'm in the room, I'm up in there doing my thing, and the lady say, I remember putting that one on there, and I hit it, and I heard a voice. See, I ain't talking about that schizophrenia, I ain't talking about them bells, I'm talking about the voice of God. I hear it, and if I could interpret it today, I would tell you it sounded something like surgery of the spirit. So I get up, and I tell the house lady, I say, you need to get your door because I'm gone. They look at each other like, you know, she don't never leave. She just tripping. You know, we all got this thing that we do when we get it in us. So, you know, you use it with people. I don't know why we use with the most. We use with people who we don't even like, not even the same caliber. We can't stand these people. We always go back to their house. So, you know, you got one that's always picking up something off the floor, and they tasting it, and it's always somebody's toenail. And then you got one that's over here talking too much, talking too much, talking too much. And then you got one over here who can't talk at all. And then you got one who always peeping out the window. Because the police coming, and then the rest of them think you the police. So I don't even know why I'm still doing this act, because see, now the drugs just using me. I'm not enjoying it at all. I can't get nothing. I told you I'm grabbing the hot end of the stem. I can't stand it no more. Everybody rigging the pipe, you get the smoke, all the smoke coming out of their ears. Oh, I didn't get it. I didn't get that one. So now using just ain't no fun no more. But it's a Friday night and I'm holding. And I got the package and I get the money. And I come up in there and I put that one on there and I hear the voice of God. Oh, on a Friday night at 1:00 in the morning, I remember telling her, you need to get your door. So they just looking around at me. She ain't going nowhere. But I stepped outside the crack house door on a Friday night. I remember I just wanted to touch the hem of his garment. I remember I just wanted to be made whole again. God, if you'll help me this night. I'm talking about, it was in September and the wind kind of hit me in the face. And I remember I still had on that little short dress. I ain't never wear no drawers. I ain't having no drawers. So I'm talking about, I stepped outside the crack house door and that wind just kind of hit me. And I said, thank you, Holy Spirit. Thank you. It's called surgery of the spirit. So I step outside the door and I fall on my knees. On a Friday night at 1:00 in the morning, I said, God, please help me. See, I had a whole lot of foxhole prayers. I was always asking God for one more chance. And here I was, at the end of my road. I didn't know that's what it was called. So I'm walking down the street. I broke the pipe. Y'all know I done broke a whole lot of pipes. Every time I would break a pipe, you know, y'all talking about don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle. I go back, pick up the stem. 10 minutes later, I'm standing over somebody's stove. Eyebrows, everything singed. I just want to see one more cloud. So I break the pipe and I walk down the street and I'm talking to myself and it starts raining. And it's something about a wet attic. I remember just being wet and I'm humiliated and I can't go back to my mom's house. She don't even feed me no more. I done stole my stepfather's gun. I done been to penitentiary. My daughter hates my guts. I'm at the end of my road, God. And I'm walking down the street with my head down. 1 o'clock on a Friday night, this car just kind of rolled by real slow. You know, see, he think I'm working. What else you going to be doing out here on a Friday night? He said, hey, baby girl, what's up? What you need? I said, I don't need no money. I need some help. Can you help me? Because y'all know the dope boys is on the next block. I'm about to change my mind. So the guy let me get in his car. I fall in his car in the fetal position, crying out to God. He dropped me off at the only detox we had in that little town. And see, I had been to treatment 5 times. Y'all know how we do. We in and out, in and out. We telling everybody this time it's going to be different. Everybody done lost all hope for you. You see, that's why whenever, see, newcomer, for those of you who keep coming, see, you still got to hug them because you don't know when they really done. So I go to the detox treatment center, and I knock on the door, and the nurse just kind of look out there at me. She said, oh, that's just Marsha. She probably running from somebody. She probably, she owe her something, because I never went to treatment for myself. And I remember telling her, I just need a bed, you know. And she said, we don't have a bed. Can you come back tomorrow? I'm like, no, I can't come back tomorrow. Somebody's going to kill everybody in treatment if you don't let me in. You know, I'm crazy, half a perm, 85 pounds. You know, I'm talking about I fell up in there with blisters on both of my thumbs from lighting the light all night. I don't know if you use like that. I'm talking about I had smoked so long and them blisters and calluses was on my thumbs and my face was twisted. I had something called Bell palsy. I couldn't straighten up my face. I'm at the end of my road. I tell the lady, I say, if you'll give me a bed. She said, well, Marsha, have a seat in the lobby, and if we discharge one person in the morning, we'll give you the bed. Well, y'all know it wasn't nothing but God. They let one person out, and they gave me the bed. I'm sitting back there in the back of the room, covering up them black screens. I'm so tired. I've been up for 5 or 6 days. I ain't had nothing but a barbecue potato chip and a dill pickle. But then I remember just sitting back there in treatment, and I woke up in a room like this and had 30 people in a circle. Okay, the counselor was up in the front doing his spiel. First things first, easy does it. One day at a time. Give yourself a break. I had heard those cliches. I knew how to teach the class. I was just wondering, man, how do you do that? But I woke up 95 days later. In treatment, I got 95 days. I'm just so grateful to have 95. Listen, I got the little 90-day chip, but I wanted the 95-day chip. Y'all need to recognize I got 95. So I'm sitting in treatment. I'm always at the VA hospital because I'm a veteran, honorably discharged, never got found out about. So I'm down in, they sent me to the Atlanta, Georgia area. So I'm down in Atlanta, Georgia, in treatment with 95. And a lady was celebrating her 3-year anniversary. 3 years? I had never seen 3 years? Who gets 3 years? How do you get 3 years? So she was celebrating and all this stuff was going on. And I remember I want to give a shout out to H&I because H&I brought the message in. I joined that subcommittee because I had never seen anybody do anything like they did. And every week, week after week, they would bring their message in. But this particular night, this lady was picking up her 3-year medallion. So I had been coming to recovery long enough to know that recovery was about attraction. You know, whatever brings you back. I was attracted to her cake. She had a cake and some balloons. I said, I want my own cake. I want my name on the cake. I want somebody to celebrate me. So at 95, I'm watching all this stuff go on, and the girl said, when she finished doing her speech, she had a special medallion. It had a 3 in the middle of it. It had duty, honor, sir. It had all this stuff on it, you know, society and all that. And she said, well, the lady in the back that picked up 90 days, come up here and get this medallion. I was like, she don't know me. I said, who is she talking to? And the soldier next to me said, it's yours. Go get it. And y'all know I went up there. I went to get it like I was going to cop. You know, and so I went up the aisle, and she just laid it in my hand, and she whispered in my ear. She said, trust the process. She said, baby girl, whatever you do, if you don't put it in your hand, it won't get in your body. She said, you hold on to this and don't use. She said, and give it back to me in 3 years. So I took the thing. I'm shaking. I don't know what all that means. I go back to my seat, and I want to use a whole lot of nights after that. But I got that girl's thing. I said, oh, fuck, I got the shit. Got that girl's thing. Fuck. See, I didn't know nothing about the 12 steps, the 12 traditions and all that stuff. I just wanted to know how you not go cop. How you not go get it. And I promised her I wouldn't go get it. I look for her in every convention. I look for her in every meeting. I want to tell her the seed you planted on me with 95 days. I've been here 25 years. See, God will make your private struggles become public victories. All you got to do is do what you told to do. Come around here and start doing what it is you need to do. I'm going to talk about the now. See, that's what we're doing now. We're talking about the now. See, now I'm in recovery. Now I'm Musher P. Now I got some time. You know how we sit back in the rooms and we decide, okay, now when you got time, you're supposed to be different. People look at you different. You know, you make better, healthier choices. And so now I'm in recovery, and I'm sitting in the back of the room watching all the new people come in, and I'm judging everybody. You know, I'll never do a newcomer until he walked in. I'm like, Lord, that boy is cute. I was driving a drop top Benz, and he was getting off the detox van. My sponsor said, baby, I got a soft-spoken sponsor. I chose someone who I wanted something from. She never uses profanity, just a really nice lady. And she said, baby, ain't nothing right about that. She said, you're being stupid. So I'm like, okay, but I like him. So now, whenever he used in my bathroom, I find him nodding. Y'all know that messed me up. I'm Marsha P. Y'all talking big shit about me because now you know that girl knew better than to hurt that baby. I was like, my God. So now the newcomer, got that out of the way. Oh, I'll never do a married man. Y'all want me to be honest or what? So now I got a married man I'm fooling with. And I love him, and I told him, and we had a decision, you know, just, you know, I told him, I said, well, listen, I can do your wife, you know, I'm good with you being married, but don't mess with nobody else. Y'all know that, you know, the book talks about that we would rationalize the most outrageous nonsense. I'm good with your wife. So y'all know I went to the women's rep, found out he was doing somebody else. Oh, hell, now I want to write a damn country song. So now I want to call your wife and tell her you cheating on us. This is some bullshit. See, I learned a long time ago in here, justification and rationalization equals masturbation. It equals self-gratification. If you don't let somebody help you up in this piece, you're going to be playing with yourself. Don't play with yourself up in here because you're going to need to tell the truth about yourself. So I wasn't feeling good about that. So the newcomer, the married man, and then of course I'm in a healthy relationship now. Now one thing about me, let me back up and say this. Now I just told you I'm a country girl. Now I don't know anything about friends with benefits, you know, none of that bullshit. If I give you some, we together. Don't be coming to the meeting tomorrow acting like we ain't together, because we together. So now I'm in a relationship with somebody. Oh, we just got it going on. You know, he's spiritual, I'm deep. We wearing matching outfits and shit. So we got this thing, everybody love us, right? And then the relationship is over before I say it's over. You know how we be like, we don't want somebody till they move on. You know, I'm like, he had been trying to get back with me, but I was like, no, I'm good. So then he moves on. He tell me, I'm moving. What the hell you mean you're moving on? So, you know, now he with a new girl. He bringing her to my home group. Now let me tell you something. I don't care how much time you got, how spiritual you are. When he brought that broad to my home group, look, she was tall and slim, beautiful, had long hair, and that bitch hair was real. What the fuck? So now you introducing her to our friends, you know, you bring her to my home group, this thing must be serious. I'm sitting back there planning their deaths in every meeting. I'm gonna kill 3 newcomers and 2 old timers. I'ma kill everybody. So my sponsor said, well, just let it go. So my sponsor was always, you know, let it go. You know, he wasn't worth it. You know what kind of man he was. You know, just Marsha, now y'all know when something over and you ain't ready, you be holding people hostage. You know, the meeting be, you every time you see him, y'all be dodging me and stuff. Because you know I'm be talking about a relationship that's been over. So I'm still stuck. So I'm looking at him like, you know, what? Are you serious? Are you kidding me? I'm planning their deaths, y'all. I can't hear the message. Every time somebody's sharing, I'm in the back. I'm gonna run both of them over. I don't know. I'm just crazy. So like I said, when I'm in a relationship, I'm crazy. I'm telling you, I'm one of these women who, you know, I'm loyal. I want you to be loyal. Do not fuck around on me or you will die. I just want somebody to be, you know, be down with me, like, you know what I'm saying? Because, again, I'm pretty loyal. Something go down, you know, all my life, you know, I want to be married. Just want to be married, you know, why I can't be married? Where's my husband? I got about 20 years clean, maybe coming up on, had 15 years clean. I had never been married, never engaged, nothing like that. So I'm like, well, what's up with me? You know I'm a good person. You know, I'm straight up. I'm 100. So why I can't find a husband? So, now mind you, I ain't asking God for nothing. You know, we like to do the picking ourselves. So I'm in Home Depot and Lowe's every day. Listen, every time I go to the store, I got on two pair of Spanx and a push-up bra. And I'm in Tool World. Looking for a husband. God damn, I want somebody to have on, I needed him to have on a pair of boots and a tool belt. You know what I'm saying? I needed him to be, fix some floor, hardwood. I like a man who can do some stuff with the floors. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, I'm steady, you know, thinking I need a husband. See, what I didn't realize was it's not so much wanting to be married. I just wanted a wedding. There is a difference. So now I go through the pain of relationships ending. And I remember that my mom, she had given me a card on my 15th birthday, and the card was beautiful. And I opened it up, and she said, Marsha, I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of the things you're doing. She said, keep going to them classes. I'm so proud of you. Keep going to them classes. And at the bottom, she said, you know, there'll come a time at night when you can't sleep. She said, you'll toss and turn. Don't count sheep. No, she said, don't count sheep. Just talk to the shepherd. She said, go to God in prayer. She said, Marcia, I'm proud of you. 10 days later, she was gone. I never felt that kind of pain in my life. I love my mama. She was the only one that put up with all of my mess. What was I going to do the first day of the rest of my life without her? So I come on home. Y'all know, you know how when somebody passed away, especially in black families, I don't know about white people, but black people, they want everything. The one who ain't never did shit for your mama, they be the first one in line. They fall out at the funeral. They do all this foolishness. They want to sell all her stuff. And I was in so much pain. And so for years, I didn't speak to my siblings. I was so consumed in grief and pain and suffering. And I remember it came a time whenever I said, I just can't do this no more. I love my family. What happened was, I was so tired. I needed surgery on the spirit. I can't hold it against them no more. She gone. God help me. I had a great mother. I wanted to say, you know, how do you get over somebody passing? What I did, I kept coming. I kept coming to meetings. I would hear about other people suffering. See, this thing is about our connection. I loved her. And there's some days now that I'm still not over it. So in closing, I want to tell you that this journey has not been easy, but it's been real. I want to tell you that I remember not being kissed for those 12 years because of what I was doing with my mouth. So when I got clean, I had periodontal treatments, I wore braces, I wanted my smile back. See, some people on this journey, now you clean, now you're supposed to know how to do some stuff. Now you got to love on people, even the unlovable ones. You got to love on the ones who you know just gossiped about you. You got to love on the ones that nobody else don't like. See, I picked the one in the room that don't nobody else fuck with. That's going to be my girl. That's my girl right there. The one that don't nobody want to fool with. Maybe you just need to love on her and teach her how to dress, teach her how to talk, how to walk. I didn't know how to do that when I got here. I didn't sleep around. I could still count the ones on my hand. But it wasn't because I was so dainty and didn't want to sleep with people. Hell, I didn't have no pussy left when I got here. So now people come in the rooms. You know, it's a lot of stuff that go down in the rooms. You know, I ain't going to call you out. See, this is the mic. This is my time to use the story. But see, I'm not going to use this time as a battleground. This is the only thing that has ever worked for me. There's a lot of shit to go down up in here that ain't right in this piece. But I ain't going to just call you out on it. I just don't fuck with you. See, I let you do your thing. It's be people be doing the wrong thing. See, stuff on your journey, stuff's going to happen on your journey while you're here. If your name has not been on the tabloids, just wait. Somebody gonna character assassinate you. You gonna come up in here, you gonna lose houses, jobs, cars. You gonna lose friendships. You gonna lose marriages. You gonna go in foreclosure. You gonna have some shit go down. Your children gonna be a mess. Your children might come out. Hell, you might come out. It's gonna be some shit go down in this piece. And you gonna wonder, how did you get here? So what happens is you keep coming and you keep learning and you trust in the belief of what's going on. So all that stuff that go on, like I saw some crazy stuff last night. People be selling shit in the bathroom. Oh, you know who you are. So you got, my sponsor told me, hey, listen, you got folks that come in here and do a whole lot of stuff. Now, the only time you get offended is whenever you know it's you. When I'm telling my story, I'm talking about Marsha P. I'm telling you, I was raised up in here with old folks, people who used to tell you the truth. See, now you can't talk to people. You can't say certain shit to people. They get all offended. Now, I'm the kind of person, you know, I ain't coming up in here. I don't need to be in the motherfucking world's famous home group. I ain't got to have a world famous sponsor. Fuck that. You know, I am not cliquish. I don't want to be in the ones where everybody got to have this or have that. So, you know, you're making people feel isolated. If I was new, I might leave this motherfucker. I'm telling you now, I ain't going no goddamn well. And you can act funny if you want to. So it's a whole lot of people that might not like Marsha P, but how about it's all right? Because, see, I got favor on my life. Because you know what? Whenever God changes your name, you get in place. What you got to do is step in place and be who you are. And don't accept the unacceptable. What you do is know who your name is. And you walk with a purpose. I don't walk in every goddamn meeting speaking, telling everybody I got 25 years. You got mother come to the meeting late, share, then leave. You got mother come in the meeting, take up all the newcomer time. You got people coming to the meeting, picking up newcomers. You got people doing a whole lot of bullshit. But I tell you what, how about Marsha P? I'm going to keep coming. I'm going to tell you what I had to do. I had to take a look at me. Because whenever you take a look at me, you ain't got time to be surfacing on whatever everybody else is doing. I'm telling you, I do what I got to do to be here. So now, they told me at the end when I got here, they told me, clean house, trust God, and serve others. Clean house! Stop using, lying, cheating, and stealing. Clean house. Old folk used to say, sweep around your own front door. Clean house. You know, don't worry about who's zooming who. Come up in here and do you. Clean house. Trust God, the God of your understanding. Not my God. I'm telling you, I look to the hills from where I get my strength from. I know who my God is. I don't have a problem telling you when I got the mic, it's about the blood for me. I know what it is for me. I don't care what it is. You judge me if you want to. I'm telling you, I know there's a God. I feel him in my soul. A God that I know took this little person like me with 5 felonies. He took me from being homeless to making me the homeless program director. He took me from being homeless. I'm telling you, I that little raggedy car I used to drive, I don't drive that no more. I drive them BMW, Audis. I drive them high-end cars. You know, it ain't never been about a payment. It's about the maintenance on that motherfucker. Let's talk about the maintenance. Yeah, let's talk about the maintenance. We talking about the 10th, 11th, and 12th step, the maintenance of this program. You can get here, but can you stay here? Can you stay here whenever your name is on the tabloid? Can you stay whenever, you know, you're being character assassinated? Come on back, girl. Come on back, baby girl. Have a seat for the ride of your life. See, life is not measured by the breaths you take, but by the things that take your breath away. This program takes my breath away. The last house on the block for me. Clean house, trust God, serve others. Service. Service is what I'm doing today. You come to Miles when Sherman asks you to come. You come. I didn't care nothing about. See, I'm all nervous about how many people in this room. I would have came if it was 3 people. They said 3 people. If it would have been 3 people, whenever you start being all up in your head about everybody gonna be in the other meeting and all that shit, I was over in the women's meeting before I came over here. It was hard for me to get up because I was loving what Anne Marie was talking about. I was moving. I was like grooving. I wasn't caught up in, oh my God, they might not be in my meeting. Fuck all that. Come on and say what you got to say. In closing, you need to declare things over your life. See, you're going to have them haters. You're going to have a few people who don't like you, who don't like you. And I'm talking about, don't be hating on me because I'm beautiful. Hell, it's just my coat of many colors. My father gave it to me. Don't worry about what all, you know, it's something about her. You need to hear my goddamn story before you change your mind. I had a simple sponsor. She taught me principalities. Principalities mean come to the convention. Register for the convention. Don't sneak in the goddamn banquet. Pay your dues. Principalities. Start doing the right thing for the right reason. You coming up here worried about your goddamn hair, worried about your nails, worried about all that shit. Buy your damn registration fee. I'm talking about surgery of the spirit. Surgery of the spirit. Let me tell you something about surgery of the spirit. Now, as a woman, I don't know about men, but as a woman, you know, we just ain't done unless our hair is done. Okay? So my stylist, I got this new stylist. I'm in a new area in Atlanta. I ain't got a stylist yet. So she did my hair just okay. You know, it's all right. So, you know, I keep a few tracks in my goddamn pocketbook all the time. So, You know what I'm saying? But I'm going to go ahead and do some tracks in my hair because, again, if your hair ain't done, you ain't done. And I'm telling you, the surgery of your spirit, when you feel good, when you walk good. Again, I ain't got to tell you I got 25. When you see me walking, you know I've been around here for a minute. Be all right with who you are. Don't let nobody else tell your story. Tell your own story. I know my story better than anyone. And I'm going to close this. My daughter, that same little five-year-old that I abandoned and treated so bad. Today, she's 44 years old. She say, Mama, I love you. She said, I love you, Mama. She said, you're a good mama. She said, thank you. She said, Mama, you're a smart woman. You can go back to school. She talked me into going back to school with her. And we walk together and get our master's degrees. Yeah. I'm talking about summa cum laude, magna cum laude. She said, Mama, we can do the PhD. I said, well, let's do it, goddamn. Let's do it. I'm talking about a child who used to hold me hostage for all that shit I did for so many years. Y'all know we came in here boxing because she used to remind me of who I hadn't been to her. But see, I couldn't let her hold me like that no more. I'm still your goddamn mama. You ain't getting ready to play with me like that. I still got that project in me, and I will tear your ass down. So I'm good to go now. I'm good to go now. I thank you, Ocean City. Thank you, D.C., for having me, because I know now that was where I started my journey. I love D.C. I love where I come from. If you ain't all right with who you are, you need to find out what it is to get back to that. Because all you have is your story. They told me when I got here, the broader the base, the higher the point of freedom. Thank you.